Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
It is Summertime Blues on the Savage Nation. Now, you would expect me to be talking about Obama today. You'd expect me to be talking about the White House becoming Chicago's 51st ward. You would expect me to be disclosing what the emails reveal about the Gordon Brown British Labor Department, Labor government. I'm not going to talk about any of that. I'm going to stay focused on something else today. And that is a profile of Michael Savage's in the New Yorker magazine. Remember I told you months ago for my regular listeners that Major Mag guy wanted to do it. I didn't know whether to do it. You know, I asked you whether I should do it. I included you in the emails. Remember that? Well, the article's coming out. Now, I expected it to be a hit piece. I will say that it's a pretty good portrait of me, but it's pretty funny, some of it. And Kalefa Sena, who wrote it, calls it Party of One, Michael Savage Unexpurgated. Now, I'm not going to read you the whole article. What I want you to do is go buy it. But we have a real treat for you today on the Savage Nation. And that is a, what's it called, monkey pod? What do they call a podcast? A monkey podcast of excerpts from the article, an interview with the author by the gentleman who writes the, edits this digital thing on the New Yorker. I think you're going to get a kick out of it today. And I'll tell you why I'm going to play it. A, it's about me. But B, it's interesting to me that a major league organ of the liberal establishment, that is the New Yorker, would treat me more fairly than the National Review or the Weekly Standard or Conservative News Service. I can name a dozen sites that pose as conservatives who pretend Michael Savage doesn't exist. And it's interesting to me that the New Yorker, which you'd say, oh, that's the Bible of the liberal, would do a profile of you to begin with and not paint you as Hitler Jr., which they didn't do. I think it's very interesting that the intellectual or the intelligentsia of the liberals understand there's a nuance even in conservatives, and they got it very close to who I am. And, you know, I expected the, what do you call it? Well, let me go back in time. Play Desafinado for a minute by Stan Getz. Because I was distracted with my email. I didn't get started the way I wanted to. All right, now play A-Train for me. See if you can dig up A-Train. Because I'm going to get into the whole frame of the subway car, the Brooks Brothers raincoat with the tuna fish stain, Stan Getz. Here we go. See, now we're talking. Now you're getting into the rhythm of Michael Savage, as opposed to what the media wants you to think I am. I'm closer to Charlie Parker than I am to Pat Buchanan. I'm closer to Yankee Stadium than I am to whatever. The Nuremberg Rally? Does that work? That wasn't bad. That was a nice one, wasn't it? I caught that one on the fly. I mean, if I were jumping 20 feet in the air, I couldn't have caught a better ball than that one. Anyway, I'm in a pretty good mood because, all right, they get the picture. I'm only talking to 12 people today in the sense that it's a late July the regular conservatives wanted to hear me railing against Obama or something to that effect, so they've turned the show off already. Instead, they're listening to someone who sounds like Groucho Marx's grandmother, who's just had a hysterectomy. But I'm not going to go there. I'm going to tell you why this is a big day for me. When I was growing up, now let's say after high school, I'm in college. In college now, Queens College, I'm trying to make, you know, some ideas about who I want to be. You don't know who you are in college. You have no idea. You're focused only on dating, having sex, not, you know, doing badly in school, doing as well as you can. You know, you're floating along with the river, but you don't know who you are. Nobody in college knows who they are. Almost nobody does. They lie if they do. You'll tell me you knew who you were. All right, you're the rare one. But now how do you formulate who you are? Let's say you're a thinking person, as I've been all my life. Serious guy, very deep, as I was told since I'm five, carried the world on my shoulders. That's what the neighborhood people said. They would look at me like, wow, like, okay, kid, you're carrying the world on your shoulders. You should be a this, you should be a that. So you try to figure out who you are. You can't do it through your own milieu because the people around you are not who you want to become. Now, don't take that the wrong way. In other words, you don't want to become a merchant necessarily. You don't want to open up a box factory, a corrugated box factory in Long Island City, although that was a good living, and they had an Oldsmobile 98 and you had a Chevy or whatever, a used Cadillac. You didn't aspire to be a guy who owned a corrugated box factory. So what did you want to be? You don't know. The parents say, be a doctor, because a doctor in those days was as close to God. Be a lawyer. That was as close to the devil as you can be, but he made money. You can't be a doctor or a lawyer, you could be a dentist. You don't like teeth and halitosis, you could be an accountant. You can't do that, you could always become a ventriloquist, whatever. But none of that worked for me. I didn't want to be any of those things. So I started to read very deeply. I read a lot of novels. Then I read a lot of biographies. Then I started to try to read the magazines that counted. And I forget the names of them in those days that were out. I can't even remember them. One of them was that I would read, you know, The New Yorker, and I'd see a lot of it was like movies to go to and theater that's on. And I never went to any of that. I know you want an update on Banned from Britain. I'm not going to do it right now. I'm not ready for it. Please, no calls about banning me in Britain. I've been banned in Britain, and that's the end of it for now. I'll tell you more about it another time. So I would notice who the profiles were done of whom they were writing. In other words, I'm going to take you back now in time. So I'm reading as a kid now in college, and I see there's profiles in the year 1960. I'm going to go back now to the early list. Profiles of people done by The New Yorker in the times I was in college. Federico Fellini, 1965. Bob Dylan, 1964. I say, oh, wow. Albert Einstein was already 1973. Dizzy Gillespie, 1990. Maud Saul, they profiled in 1960. Stanley Kubrick is profiled in 1966. Buckminster Fuller is profiled in 1966. Albert Einstein is profiled in 1973. One of my favorite profiles was a guy you never heard of named Joe Gould, who was a well-known Greenwich Village bohemian. I loved that profile so much. It actually stayed with me for ages. For some reason, it's because he was an iconoclastic bohemian in the Greenwich Village scene, and they hated his guts because he once said to the group of bohemians in Greenwich Village, I'll never forget it as long as I live, they were all sitting around having drinks, usually for free. If they can get some rich guy from uptown to buy him a drink, they were happy. So Joe Gould said, you know, you guys all pretend to be bohemians, but at the hint of a dollar, you jump up from your chairs and run as fast as you can. So they excommunicated him for that. I liked him for that. Then in the 1960s, they profiled Richard Evan Schultes, a Harvard ethnobotanist. He was like my intellectual god for years. Remember, I have a PhD in nutritional ethnomedicine. I spent many years searching the jungles of the South Pacific for medicinal plants. My collections are in Kew Gardens, England. They're in the Bishop Museum in Honolulu and somewhere else. I don't know. They're all around the world. But what I'm getting at is when you see a profile of people like this, Ray Charles, 1968, Woody Allen, 1994, Martin Scorsese, 2000, you realize that these profiles are very rare and they're very important. And so, therefore, it was important for me to see the profile, how it would be written, because I was very skittish to do it. I was pretty sure that when the writer came out, he was coming out with an agenda. So even Before he came, I sent him an email, I think, which he refers to where he says, I said to him, I'm afraid to do it because I know that the portrait will be of me, you know, in the negative. And I say, will you pose me in an SS uniform or an SA uniform? And will you turn my 10-pound poodle into a pit bull? But, of course, they didn't do it. The profile, the portrait of me is quite good. I don't like the mouth very much. The eyes, they caught. The mouth, I'm not sure if that's me. All right, it's a caricature. What can you do? You know, I have a sixth sense. I was walking around the Market Street area of San Francisco yesterday. I spent the whole day in the city because it was foggy in the evening, 57 degrees, 56 degrees. I had to wear an overcoat, which I just love. I love the fog. But earlier in the day, it was sunny, not hot, down near the Embarcadero, near the ferry terminal. They have various people selling trinkets and whatnot, open-air market. And one of them is a caricaturist. The $3.99, he'll do you a one-minute portrait. You know the kind that do a sketch of you like at Fisherman's Wharf or you know where you are. So I watched this guy do it. He was very fast and very good. And for the first time in my life, I don't know what it was. I was tempted to spend the $10 and say, do me a quick portrait. I don't know what it was. I didn't do it. But I wake up this morning and there's a quick portrait of me with a mouth I'm not sure about. So when I come back on the Savage Nation, I'm going to play a piece for you from the New Yorker, from the podcast of the article, right here on the Savage Nation. Later on, we'll do politics. Should I start reading the article? Wait a minute. Hold it. I'll read you a few sentences because many of you don't know what I'm talking about. Let's see. Even in this world of born-again refuseniks, Michael Savage is an anomaly, a heretic among heretics, nearly as contemptuous of his fellow radio stars. He refers to Limbaugh as the golfer and calls Beck the hemorrhoid with eyes, as he is of President Obama. He calls himself a genuine independent conservative, which is a kind of sales pitch and apparently an effective one. His daily broadcast, The Savage Nation, is one of the most popular shows in the country. Then they go on, blah, 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 blah. I'm going to skip around here because some of this stuff made me laugh hysterically. The stuff about the dog is just funny, about me wanting to cook Teddy's leg. Not that I want to cook Teddy's leg. Like if I was starving to death and we're both going to die, sort of like a Sophie's Choice thing, would you cook your dog's leg since you're both going to die anyway?
Savage.
I liked it when it was a mean, nasty colonial country. That's the kind of England I like because it was a fair, mean, nasty colonial country. When England had the right stuff, it was a country I admired. Once England went sissy on me and became girly men, they lost their empire. And that's what's happening to us. This country goes girly men on us, we're finished. That doesn't mean there won't be real macho guys who are tough. But when the nation loses its will to fight is when a nation falls apart. The media shows us as a non-virtuous nation. The media focuses on everything wrong with the country. The media says that the soldiers are the cowards and the so-called insurgents are the heroes. They're doing the same thing they did with the criminals in the streets of America for 40 years, making the cops evil and the killer the good person. They're sick in the head. It's not America that's sick. It's the liberals and the media that are mentally deranged.
Savage.
WOR Land in New York. George, welcome to the show. George, so you grew up a white guy in Hell's Kitchen or near Chinatown?
Chinatown, in Chinatown.
Are you Italian?
No, sir.
No, because that's right where Little Italy meets Chinatown on Canal Street?
Yeah, I was over a little more west by Henry and Pike.
All right, so how did your family wind up living in what's called Chinatown?
Well, I'm first generation American. My parents immigrated from Germany just after the war, and they had take anything.
You mean World War which? One or two?
Two.
So you were born in 46, 47?
47.
Oh, so you're a kid born there. They took whatever they could get, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
So how did you fit in being born then with Chinese kids? Did they accept you?
Absolutely. My best friend was a Chinese. Well, one of my best friends was a Chinese family who lived on the same floor in the walk-up 6'4", walk-up tenement.
Right. What I'm getting at by your story is that by the liberal stories today, you should have hated each other. That till they came along with the Great Society, every race hated each other till the white liberal showed up, when the exact opposite is true. The races got along better until the white liberal came along and turned races against each other.
That's right. We had a mixed neighborhood. We had Italians, we had Jews, Germans, Chinese, you name it, they were there. And everybody got along. Everybody's mother watched everybody else's kid. There was a
certain... Isn't that amazing? Well, there's a piece of American history, George, that needs to be written about to a great extent, because the liars who tell you that America was a land of hatred till they came along, the communist white man, till a communist white man came along, that we were living in hell in America.
No. I won't agree with that. And the only other reason, I've been listening to you for over 10 years, and right now talking to you is almost as good as sex. Okay?
Well, please, this is a family show, George. I didn't know you were going to go there.
Well, anyway, you love dogs. I've had dogs since I was 7 years old. And
I do. Have you read my book, Psychological Nudity?
No, I've been trying to get it, but
I'm going to send you a free copy, particularly the story, Tippy Dies and Thrown in a Garbage Truck. When your dog died when you were a kid, did they throw him in a garbage truck like Tippy?
No, sir. We had a funeral attendance of 15 people, and the vet threw everybody out of the office.
You know, it's amazing. So I came from a very unusual background, sir, to say it in a... So no, I thought everyone threw their dog in a garbage truck when it died. I must have had a weird family.
No, not at all.
Harsh. Ooh, I had a harsh upbringing. I had no idea. Between the cyanide and throwing a dog in a garbage truck when it died, I thought everyone did that.
Mr. Savage, could I please just tell you this? She was a 140-pound Rottweiler.
Oh, boy.
And
wow.
She was the most gentle creature. And she.
Well, I love with the women and the feminists in San Francisco. They walk around with Rottweilers like that. They come up to men and they sniff your crotch and you're scared to death they're going to tear them off. And they say, don't worry, she's gentle. And then, you know, in between your leg. Yeah, we're all gentle. No, I don't go for that. I'm sorry. Thanks for the call. I'll keep them on the line for the book. I don't believe there's such a thing as a gentle Rottweiler. To strangers? Are you kidding me? My dog is gentle, but even he's capable of being a dog. You try to take away a toy from Teddy, even he goes atavistic on you. And a pair of back teeth on him. You understand how they survived all those years. They got a pair of sharp teeth in the back that could rip your hand off. What you think about it, you say, is a small dog potentially dangerous, 10 pounds? By himself, no. But 10 of them coming at you? A mosquito. Think of what a mosquito could do with you carrying a bacteria. Okay? So you say, why? Anything can harm you. It gets you in the right spot. But the Chinese were smart in the bedrooms, the emperor's bedrooms, where they had 10, 20 Lhasa Apsus trained to kill. Because one big dog, the enemy, the assassin, could kill like a person. They could cut its throat. But 20 Lhasa Apsus barking and screaming and yapping and coming at you in every direction, that's almost impossible even for a ninja to... And by that time already, the guards are there, you see. That's how that worked. So if you're thinking of watchdogs, I would suggest lots of small ones.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Last summer, I wrote Psychological Nudity, which were all of my radio stories, One Arm Frank, etc. I'm going to take requests of which story you would like me to read to you of the Michael Savage radio story list, the playlist. Is it My Silent Brother, The Electric Blue Saddle Stitch Pants, Fat Al's Tuna, Nutty Friend Had Crazy Mother? Coney Island Wax Figures, Dead Man's Pants, Tippy the Mad Dog, Woodchuck Bill, Happy and Sad Cufflinks, When Pasta Was Spaghetti, was it First Autopsy, was it Talking to a Bum About God, was it Working on Cruise Lines, was it Love by the Sewer Plant, was it From Immigrant Son to Radio Stardom, or any of the other favorites, because they're all in Psychological Nudity, and I'd rather read them to you. for a little bit before we get back to politics. I'll read one. Here's one. I like Walter Cronkite and Purgatory of Manhood by Cyanide. So here's what I wrote. Who did I actually like in mainstream news? Let me just run on this for a minute. I did like Walter Cronkite because he had a deep voice and a mustache. He reminded me of an Italian dentist that I knew in the Bronx. You always had to behave yourself when you were around guys with mustaches like that because they could do weird things to you if you didn't. Cronkite was a very authoritative man, and how he presented the world is how I thought the world was. I might be eating steak and French fries and cherry vanilla ice cream on a TV tray, building up my negative cardiac profile while Dad was working. I'd be watching Cronkite. I had no idea what he was talking about. You see, kids don't really know what the news is, nor does the average adult really pay that much attention. I think we give media people too much power by thinking people really listen to their every word. Every time they put out another fib, I became incensed. Oh, look what they said. Look at the phony poll about Obama. But the fact is that they don't have that much direct influence on the average person. I get excited because I can see what they're doing, but do you? Dad would walk in at 6:30 at night, white from a day in the store. He might just have fought his way home through a snowstorm in his big green DeSoto. And here is his number one son getting fat, watching television, eating steak and cherry vanilla ice cream. He's starving and there's no food for him. I don't have to tell you what flashed through his eyes, my eyes, my mother's my mother's eyes, and the dog's eyes. He never thought I'd amount to anything. The arguments we would have, my God. You're ruining the kid. Look what you're doing. You're making him soft. You've got to make a kid hard, he used to yell. Look what you're doing to the kid. You're making him a weakling. He'll never amount to anything. He's soft. Look at him over there eating that steak and ice cream. He was probably starving at that point. He got home with the slush and galoshes, snow over the top, and his worst nightmare came true. His wife was catering to his son. Then I go on. The guy comes back from the hunt, and what's going on in the cave? The woman he is married to is cooking for the child who has done nothing that day but go to school and look at girls. So it was soon thereafter that the whole soft life came to an end. No more ice cream, no steak, no TV trays. I was forced to go into his store's basement on Ludlow Street to clean bronzes. That's the beginning of my purgatory and my manhood. You know, this is very good writing. I was too close to it last year to realize how good this is. This is as good as the... So you see why I like The Sopranos and Mad Men? I have a flavor. I'm editorializing now. I'm reading my own book like new. It's good writing because it's simple, basic. I grew up reading real writers like Hemingway, who wrote... See, he was a journalist first, and he taught me to write as succinctly as possible. Then when I was studying to be a scientist, I learned scientific writing to write scientific papers, and the first rule was succinct, as few words as possible to get your ideas across. Anyone can write long sentences and the herefore, theretofore, and then. That's not the way to write. So I said, that's the beginning of my purgatory, my manhood. It says it like straight out, you know? I was cast down into the cellar where I used cyanide solution to clean bronze statues of their gorgeous patina. The statues were gorgeous. I learned a lot about art because I stared at them all day long. Now you may say, what do you know about art? Well, I know quality from junk, artistry from fakery. The rest is a matter of taste. Now, let's analyze that line together. Look what I just wrote. What do you know about art? I know quality from junk, artistry from fakery. The rest is a matter of taste. That sentence is succinct, and it says it all. Anyway, so I'll go back to the book. So these figures would come in with a brown or black patina, which is the result of oxidation over time. The patina was sublime. But the nouveau who were buying the figures to turn them into lamps wanted them to glitter like gold. Underneath the patina was the original bronze metal. I'll take that. I'll turn it into a lamp. Mount the thing. Blah, blah, blah. They'd buy it, and a certain number would be left for the weekend that I'd have to clean down in the basement, down into the dirty, horrible, dank dungeon, filled with huge old wine barrels, a toilet from hell, no mirror on the wall except the shattered shards speckled from the acid that hit it. I'm down there from a young age with a toothbrush scrubbing away at the patina. I don't really know if the cyanide was that bad. If it was, I'd be dead by now, I think. Perhaps it protected me from something. Hey, Dad, explain to me how I can use cyanide, since I understand from basic chemistry that they use cyanide balls at San Quentin. They put a guy in the chair and strap his head over the bucket and the pellets drop in. Then the gas comes up and he's dead in a few seconds. Dad, why would you put me in a basement with cyanide pellets to clean bronzes? Here's the answer now. This is right out of the Bible. I couldn't believe it. It took me 30 years to figure this out. This was a repetition of Abraham and Isaac. You see, Abraham picked up the knife and God said, slay your son. He didn't even ask, my son? You sure you mean my son? Your son, I want him dead. All right, I'm a good guy, I'll kill my son for you. He grabs the kid, grabs him by the neck, like an Islamo-fascist, and is about to cut his throat when God says, wait, I was just kidding, I was only testing you. Now, no one ever talked about what that did to Isaac. The father he trusted suddenly grabs him by the neck and wants to cut his throat. You know, all you hear about is Abraham was so loyal and listened to God. But what did it do to Isaac? It drove him nuts. He never trusted anyone after that. His own father wanted to cut his throat because he was listening to someone in the sky. So now I'm in the basement, and he says to me, you're going to clean bronzes because you're going to become a man. I'm going to make you tough. You got to do something, blah, blah, blah. And you're going to use these pellets. Here's a big barrel of them. I get them from a chemical supply store. You drop them in water, and then you dip in your brush and wash the bronze, and the black comes off, and it looks shiny again. The customer wants the shiny statue for a lamp. So I say to him, how do you know it's not going to kill me? Here's what Abraham says to me. I mean, in the modern-day story, he says, because there's a potassium salt of the cyanide and a sodium salt of the cyanide. But here's the kicker. Dad doesn't tell me which one kills and which one dissolves patina, which is exactly why I went into science and medicine and chemistry, to find out whether he was trying to knock me off or not. I'm sorry, this is good writing. I'm sorry, this is good. Nobody else would do this except Louis from the Bowery, the one with the monkey. We get rubber gloves on up to our elbows and drop these white pellets into water, then turn it into a cyanide solution. Then we take the brush and rub the figure until the patina came off the bronze. I'm rubbing. It would take you an hour or two to do each statue. Rub, rub. I'm a kid. I'm rubbing. And what I'm thinking about is where I'm going that night. I'm going out on a date or to hang out with my friends, or I'm going to a movie. Meanwhile, my face would be getting blotched, and I'm rubbing and cleaning in what's like a Dickens basement. So I get into high school chemistry years later, and I told my teacher what I was doing. I was using cyanide balls. My father had a huge chemical supply. It was not used for anything but this. I said to the teacher that I used these cyanide balls for cleaning statues, for cleaning solution. Teacher said, what? It's poisonous, but don't get worried. There's a sodium cyanide, and there's a potassium cyanide salt. Now, to this day, I don't know which one kills you. If you're a doctor reading this or listening to this on the Savage Nation or a trained scientist, I want you to think about what I'm going to say. Is it possible that inhaling the fumes that didn't kill you outright in some way mitigated against the oxidation of fatty foods powering through my arteries? I have a pet theory that in some way, although it blotched my face, it built up my immunity to something. I know it did. I just don't know what. So that story is found in Psychological Nudity by Michael Savage. Great story. Worthy of a movie.
Savage.
New York City, WOR. Norm, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Mr. Savage. You were talking about why the Republicans don't seem to be talking about the arts.
Yeah.
I'm an artist in New York City. I'm also an art teacher. And
wow.
I noticed that most of the artists on the grassroots level in the galleries, they all tend to be liberals, leftists. I'm rare among them. And you got the perfect example of 1937 when Johnny Rockefeller II, he hired this guy, Orozco, who was a painter, to do his mural.
Rockefeller hired Rothko to do his murals. That's how he got to fame.
Well, no, he was top guy. So he hired a creative guy, and he tried to paint Lenin in one of those murals, which he did. These guys, the painters, tend to be leftists. The guys up on top who would give the grants, who spend the money, they tend to be mostly Republicans, and not too good in art, and they have a little bit of envy in them because they're not artists. So who runs?
Yeah, but why don't the conservatives who have the money demand more from the artistes? Why are all the artistes so left wing? Why is it that they don't understand the basics, which is that when repressive regimes arise, as they have in Venezuela, the artists suffer? Don't they put two and two together that the left today is the danger, that there is no right at all in this country? There's absolutely no right wing government whatsoever. There's no right wing waiting in the wings in this country. Where is it?
It's gone.
The Republican Party isn't the right wing. They're the Republican Party.
Absolutely right.
The true party of liberation is a party of one. That's what I've been trying to say with my show for these years. A party of none is also a liberation, to not belong to either of these machines. Thanks for the call. Whatever.
Are you buried in debt? Credit cards, collection accounts. Now you can get out of debt. Here's a real story. Randy had $32,000 in debt. With our help, he's debt-free and was able to buy a new home. Learn how you can get out of debt today with one free phone call and confidential debt analysis. Jerry called. He was buried in $110,000 in high-interest credit card debt and some major medical bills. With our help, he's finally on his way to a debt-free life. Susan had $13,000 in debt, and her husband didn't know about it. With our help, we got rid of her credit card debt. She's now debt-free and has money to save for her children's education. Call Credit Card Relief of America now. 877-914-DEBT. 877-914-DEBT. 877-914-DEBT.
Call Michael now at 1-800-449-8255.
Savage.
Attention diabetics, if you are covered by Medicare, free home delivery of your testing supplies is a phone call away. We make it easy and convenient. No more trips to the pharmacy, no more paperwork, and no upfront costs. We provide free delivery of diabetic testing supplies to thousands of patients nationwide. Medicare patients will receive a free meter with the newest alternate site testing technology with your first order. Finally, pain-free fingers are a phone call away. 800-605-1680. 800-605-1680. Advanced Medical Support is America's choice for free home delivery of diabetic testing supplies to Medicare patients. Call now. 800-605-1680. 800-605-1680. That's 800-605-1680.
Are you living the kind of lifestyle you'd like to be living, or just getting by? Wouldn't it be better if you were earning more and had total control over your financial future? This is Roger Pasquire. I became a millionaire at age 23, doubled it by 33, and retired at 43. How did I do it? By finding good ideas and then taking action to make money. Now in my search for new opportunities, I've found one of the best ideas I've ever seen, and I want to share it with you. Not earning what you think you should be, or maybe you have the desire to become an entrepreneur and do your own thing, then this is for you. Here's an idea so powerful that it can generate an income equal to a CEO salary, and you can do it from the comfort of your own home. Write this number down now, 1-800-447-9848. We've already helped thousands increase their earnings dramatically. Generate a new income stream starting today. Call now, 1-800-447-9848. That's 1-800-447-9848.
Has credit card debt ravaged your financial stability or your home life? Fresh Start America can help. In fact, they can eliminate up to 60% of your credit card debt. They negotiate with your creditors, reduce your debt, cut years off your payments, and stop the debt cycle. It's a proven solution. They're friendly, caring professionals who won't judge you or talk down to you. You'll get your questions answered and your debt forgiven. Avoid bankruptcy, cut your debt by thousands, and enjoy life again. Imagine taking your credit card bills and cutting them in half. If you have over $10,000 in credit card debt, call for a free consultation. There's absolutely no cost or obligation. Call now. 800-307-4094. That's 800-307-4094. Not available in all states, including South Carolina. Call us at 800-307-4094. That's 800-307-4094.
Today, everyone drives around psychologically in a hybrid car. Basically, we're driving around like in a straitjacket. We're driving around like in a hybrid mind, where it's what you think is one part of your mind and what the government tells you to think is the other part. You're half a man. Today, you're half a man of what your father was. And I don't care if you have triple the money. You're half the man. He thought freely. He spoke freely. We walk around with a zipper on our mouth. All of us have been curtailed by the perverts and the demons.
politicians are like the drunken Indian chiefs who sold out the American Indians for wampum, for guns, and for booze. And that's exactly what your mayors and your governors are doing. They're selling you down the river, especially if you're a cop. It's a disgrace. And I'm talking about illegal aliens and the crime wave that's sweeping across America. If the police go and arrest them after they have been deported and have stuck back in America, the police lose their job.
Savage.
John in Connecticut, line 5, go ahead, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, how you doing, Michael? One of the reasons why we don't listen to or expect to hear the arts and entertainment from you and others is basically we're getting from other places. And you know, I can get my arts and entertainment and go to museums and get that type of thing from other sources, and it's pretty unspinnable from my perspective. We listen to you for direct commentary on politics and finance and other things like that.
Okay, I understand that, but what if a person who is on the right side of the dial, as I am, goes to a museum or an art show and I talk about it? Why is that not of interest? In other words, seeing an art show from the conservative perspective, I'll give you an example. San Francisco once had a pretty good set of museums here. Most of them have been taken over by radical leftists who put on some of the most abominable exhibitions imaginable, such as a series of dresses and clothing worn by some old woman who had a lot of money. They actually put on an exhibit of the woman's shoes, her dresses, her clothing. And I went there, and I think rather hysterically ripped the exhibit apart. I thought that was political and artistic.
I agreed. I know there's a lot of other examples of that kind of garbage out there. And, I've heard about it in New York City. Occasionally there's been art shows where we've heard all about them. But,
well, that's what I mean. I'm not going to just talk about art to sound intellectual or to sound like a pseudo-intellectual. But when they do an exhibit in a museum about a woman's shoes, I couldn't believe what I was looking at. And I said, this is an example of what's going on in museums today. Now, that's what I mean by covering the arts. Now, of course, in passing, I'll also talk about one of the finest oceanic collections in the world, which happens to be in the museum here, but the best one is in New York City, the Rockefeller collection. You've probably seen it yourself.
Yeah, and we appreciate the interjection occasionally, but for the most part, mainly we're looking for, the direct...
All right, so what you're saying in a nice way is lay off the art crap and stick to politics.
I don't mind the art commentary occasionally, but I can get that from other places. What I can't get is direct commentary on politics. It's always spun in other places. That's why we come to you, because
listen, here's the thing. I come on late in the day in New York on the East Coast. I come on late afternoon in the Bay Area on the West Coast and in between the rest of the country. You've heard it all. Haven't you heard it by now? Haven't you heard everything about health care, or you don't have the time to listen earlier? Is that what you're saying?
We get it a little bit, but you give us a little bit different perspective. You know, appreciate your perspective on things. You know, the way that you bring in your background with the botany and things.
All right,
like
so
that.
You want me to focus almost entirely, as I've done for 15 years, on politics and lay off the other stuff.
Flavor occasionally, but I do.
I hear you. I don't know if I can do it anymore, though. I'm making an admission, John. I think after 15 years of it, I'm bored of it. I find politics extremely boring. We know look, let's talk about the basics. Obama is a Marxist. Everything about him, if it walks like a Marxist, if it talks like a neo-Marxist, it is a neo-Marxist. Why was it fair game to call conservatives who were behind Bush neocons? Why can't we call Axelrod and Rahm Emanuel and all of the others around Obama what they are, which is neo-Marxists? The answer is because we have no control over the print media in this country. They are neo-Marxists, period. I mean, the slur neocon, 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 neocon went on for years when Bush was in power, right? Yet we now have a stalking horse communist regime running this country. Some of them are overt communists. Some of them are mild communists. Some of them are light communists. There's not one of them who is an American from my point of view. Every one of them is trying to disassemble this great nation. But I've said that over and over again, John. Thanks for the call.
Savage.
I got gang tattoos on my soul.
I got gang tattoos on my brain, man. I got gang tattoos on my soul. I don't have any gang tattoos on my skin, man. I got gang tattoos on my soul. The gang I belong to is the toughest gang. It's the original gang. It's the Prophet gang. I belong to the PGs, man. I belong to the Prophet gang. I belong to the gang of prophets, man. Ezekiel, Jeremiah. I belong to the Prophet gang. The GPs, the PGs, the original prophets, man. The OPs. I belong to the prophets, man. I got tattoos on my soul, man. I got tattoos on my brain. I don't need tattoos on my skin, man. I got gang tattoos on my soul.
If I'm a psychiatrist, I take off all of August. But I'm not going to take off. I mean, you know, the end of August at the Hotel Ozone was an art film of the 1960s. I never forget that title, The End of August at the Hotel Ozone, which is exactly what the show has always been like for me in August. It's so different, August. No one's around. They are around. Those who are around are bored out of their minds. You know, most of the audience is somewhere else, wishing they weren't. But you look around, anyone who's in the media who can sustain themselves stays in the media. They don't leave. A grown-up can have a vacation in his own mind. That's the vacation. Unless it's, okay, so it's hot, yes. So you go where it's cool. I understand that. That I understand. That's one thing. But the old vacations are factory work. Toot, toot. Whistle blows. You got 2 weeks off, you know, for the holiday, so to speak. You go to Mallorca. What, are you a Brit all of a sudden? You're flying to Mallorca with the family? You're going to drink too much, eat too much, mild brioche? That's the stuff? I mean, what are you going to do there? You're going to eat squid? Calamari? I mean, what are you going to do on your vacation? I don't know. I don't know what people do. Everyone has a different thing. But if you got young kids, yes, I could understand it. Take them somewhere where they want to go, or you want to expose them to art. I can understand that. Or a wedding you can go to. Told you when I was young and traveling on the MV Waterman, my big trip to Europe, after college, during college. It was a former troop ship in World War II. They converted it to a college boat. The greatest fun I ever had in my life was on that ship. We drink all night. And we would sleep all day. What fun. Those were the days. So many characters. God, I can't even remember them, where they are today. I don't know. But the people I looked up to on that ship as like giants of the arts probably were never heard from. You know what I'm saying? When you're young, everything's upside down. You think you're nothing and they're something. It turns out they're nothing and you're something. I remember there was a guy, Andrew. I thought he was so smart because he had like a weird sense of humor. He sounded like he was on MSNBC today where, you know, sarcasm and irony passes for intelligence. But he did it so well. He was rich. He went to a boarding school, and he grew up with that snotty attitude. And I kind of loved him because I thought he was so clever. I don't know if he ever amounted to anything, but I did, and he didn't. I would have heard of him if he did. But the point I'm getting is that was a vacation. There's no such thing as that anymore, you know, to me. But if you're on a vacation, God bless you. If you got a quest coming up, if you enjoy it, it's good for you. Just not good for me. I'm going to be here is what I'm saying. So get ready for a long August because Michael Savage is going nowhere. Remember, I'm a member of the PGs or the GPs here for you on your local station.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
It is Michael Savage, Lonely Old Me, and Teddy the Poodle. All 11 pounds of him shivering here in the studio, even though it's a hot summer day, because I gave him a shower today, and I didn't wipe him properly. So he wants to go out in the sun. Unfortunately, Dad has to work a couple of more hours. And I'm here with you on the Savage Nation happily today, because I am free at last of politics, for the day anyway. Politics, of course, is going to be intermingled with all of this, the British thing and all that. I'll do it another day, but because I told you that big interview came out in the New Yorker, the magazine's coming out August 3rd, the profile, Party of One, Michael Savage, Unexpurgated by Khalefa Sana. It looks pretty good. The reason it's important to me, I keep telling you, is because the context of the New Yorker, to me, is important. You got to remember, I went to college in what year? I'm trying to remember. I don't know. 59, I entered college. And I graduated in 63. Is that right? I don't remember. I swear it's like a blank to me. Well, I'm trying to do the math. So when I started to read the New Yorker in the 60s, they were doing portraits, Bob Dylan, 1964, Fellini, 1965. And, you know, on and on through the years, Scorsese, 2000, Woody Allen, 94. I don't like Woody Allen, but he's a pretty good filmmaker. I think he's the Stepan Fetchit of the Jewish filmmakers. But it's irrelevant. The important thing is that profiles done by the New Yorker are a big deal. They're a big deal to me. And so, therefore, if it's a big deal to me, you'll have to indulge me right now in the sense that I think the writer actually caught, I'm sorry to use a phrase that's overused, the gestalt of my show. He got it. He got the essence of who I am and what the show is all about. And I gambled that he would. I mean, he was a jazz writer for years for the New York Times. And since he knows I love jazz, that's how we started the correspondence. And I figured anyone who is into music can write about musicians. Remember, he's writing about a musician. It's very hard to do because you're only hearing the music. And he's trying to get inside the musician's soul. If he could do that, I figured he can get into this radio guy's soul, because I'm not like other radio hosts. Some of them are good, some of them are terrible, some are phonies, some are not. I can't speak for the other man. I can only speak for me, and I am telling you that the age of the didactic radio show is over. I am telling you as I stand here, the day of I'm a conservative and here's what it is, or I'm a liberal and I wear a tie now, is over. No one wants to hear it anymore. Everyone's heard everything you could ever say in that format. It's over. It's dead. It's only a matter of time until that's over. Dead. Dodo bird. Think dodo bird. The only thing that will survive in talk radio is me. Or shows like mine about self. In other words, a journal of a daily life tied into politics. But if you think you're going to get away with every day like Hannity playing OU kid conservative, you're mistaken. That is the past. That's the past. It's mid-90s. At least to me it is. It's always been in the past tense. I was never interested in that monodimensional kind of stuff to begin with. So this guy caught the whole thing, I believe. And the texture of it is such that it would serve as a shooting script for a movie about me. Finally, someone's done it. So I want to do a few things for you right now. First, I'm going to encourage you to go out and buy all the copies of the New Yorker you can get your hands on for the August 3rd edition. I'd like to see them have to go back to press, because I want them to understand that we are conservative and we buy magazines. When they stop attacking everything that you believe in, you might buy the magazine. Well, go and show them that you'll go and buy the magazine by buying it. It's not a big deal. That's number one. I don't make any royalties on it, so it's from, you know, it's not for me, it's for you. You know, send the message to them that when they play fair, you'll play fair, and you'll buy the magazine. And I'm going to read a few pieces from the article itself. I'll start right here. And it says, on his radio show that afternoon, Savage had played tracks by Cannonball Adderley and John Coltrane, and he sought to draw a line connecting the music he loved as a boy, the herbal medicine he practiced as a young man, and the political philosophy he advocates now. In each case, he said he was after a kind of freedom, and he said it was the big government liberals who had abandoned freedom, and in a broader sense, abandoned him. But successful rabble-rousing requires a certain kind of optimism, a belief that sooner or later your compatriots will come to their senses. And part of what makes his radio show so engrossing is its undercurrent of pessimism. Savage never quite seems able to convince himself that the forces of righteousness will prevail. Indeed, he often gives voice to a sneaking suspicion that it doesn't much matter. Sitting on his deck, he cheerfully admitted as much. Quote, "I watch shows where they're digging up a mummy from 4,000 years ago, bothering a tomb," he said. "That person shaved, brushed his teeth with a stick, took a you-know-what, had sex, whatever. And now what? Who knows what his politics were?" Across the bay was the Chevron Richmond refinery, half hidden between the hills and the coast. "If a terrorist blew it up, it'd be the equivalent of 10 nuclear bombs," he said. "I sometimes sit there and think about the fireball." And he goes on. And he makes some statements that are not true. For example, because of his antipathy for liberals and his incendiary style, Savage is sometimes seen as an heir to iconic radio provocateurs of an earlier era, like Father Coughlin, who emerged during the Great Depression as an outspoken critic of both capitalist excess and the communist menace. He later became a more marginal figure railing against Jewish bankers. That's not me, that's Father Coughlin. Although I don't particularly like bankers to begin with. Whether they're Gentiles or Jews doesn't matter to me. All you got to do is look at Goldman Sachs. I really don't know what church or synagogue they go to. To me, they should all be in jail. That I just added, it's not in the article. And Bob Grant, he says, whose caustic broadcast made him a star in the 1970s. But when Savage talks about his chief influences, he is most likely to mention the old-timers he listened to as a kid in New York. Symphony Sid, the beloved jazz DJ, Mel Allen, the old Yankees play-by-play man, Gene Shepard, the pioneering monologuist. Now, you know something? I never listened to Gene Shepard. Everyone compares me to him. I don't remember listening to him. I'm not trying to knock the guy. I mean, I know he's good. I never listened to him. I never listened to talk radio as a kid. My father had found out listening to talk radio, but he died in 1970. I didn't know he listened. He must have listened to Bob at that time. I don't know who he listened to. I didn't listen to talk radio. I thought it was a bunch of old idiots. You're yakking away. What did I want to listen to? Some old guy grousing about in the studio. It sounded like he was on too much gin or something. What would a young guy listen to talk radio for in my day? I didn't listen to talk radio. I listened to Symphony Sid because he was a jazz DJ. And when I come home from the Palladium, I hear this great voice belting out at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm coming over the Queensboro Bridge, and the Silver Cup sign is blowing smoke in the air, and everyone's got sort of high in the car, and this guy's got the greatest voice in history, a combination of a jazz voice, a combination of booze, a combination of cigarettes, a combination of worldliness. I like the voice. Am I copying him? No. But that's the kind of voice I liked. And I love Mel Allen. Play Mel Allen so they know why I love Mel Allen. It's a high fly ball.
It's a deep right field. That ball is going. It is gone.
There. I get chills. See, I got chills up the back of my neck when I hear that. Why? I don't know why. Is it the time of America, the innocence? Was America ever innocent? Is that possible? You think there was an innocent time in any world? In any nation's history? When was America innocent? When? When was it innocent? How can a nation be innocent? Every nation is forged in blood and conquest and stealing land from somebody else. I mean, what do you want to break, wake you up like a baby from a slumber? Name a nation that wasn't forged in blood and guts and stealing land from the previous inhabitants. Can you name one nation? Please. Tell me the nation. San Francisco, stolen from the Miwoks. Filled with criminals in the lowest order right now. Don't get me. I didn't want to do politics. Look at Nancy Pelosi, those eyes. Look what Botox does to a woman. My grandmother's age, they just let the eyes droop. Look better to me than what this... Or Barbara Boxer, you see a face on her? Still think she's a girl. Oh, my God. Let's see, what else do we have here? Oh, this is good. Okay, I'll pick another. He told listeners, you'll have to go one of the other talk shows to get Obama's a Marxist. The McCain is a war hero. Adding with a trace of self-pity, I really don't care about it anymore. What he really did care to talk about more days than not was his new book, Psychological Nudity, Savage Radio Stories. He published it himself, and since last October, he has been selling it online through his website, michaelsavage.com. Psychological Nudity is essentially a series of transcripts of his broadcasts, But this book is more scattershot than its predecessors, more anarchic. There are 75 short chapters full of true or truish stories. One is only two paragraphs long, and it is called Savage Liked Art in Grade School and Hubris in Adults. It is by far the best book of his career, partly because it's the least book-like, and partly because it underscores the perverse streak that is among his most appealing qualities. What other political firebrand would self-publish a book of autobiographical anecdotes at the peak of election season? You see what he means by perverse? Don't you get it? See, many of you live in such limited worlds that you say when you see perverse, you think sexuality. But it has a bigger meaning than that. See, there's an education here. That's what I love about it. He writes well. Now that the Obama era has begun, Savage has been stirred to action by a series of outrages. The Department of Homeland Security report on right-wing extremism, the threats to states' rights, the specter of creeping socialism. But some of his best broadcasts have little to do with the news. One day he reminisced about working as a caddy in the Catskills when he was a teenager and offered a brief and rather capricious history of golf. Quote, "It's like a British thing," he said. "People have nothing to do with themselves after they pillage the colonies." I don't even remember these one-liners, but I'm good.
Savage.
Savage. George Bush promises not to attack Obama, and he gave his first speech in Canada. In Canada. He wouldn't dare show his face in America. The man who said that we should have deregulation, no regulation, let the free market
determine the best for the people.
Savage. Now, you know I've criticized that rubbish from the Republicans for years. I was onto this years ago. I called them liars, the Republicans. I called them phonies. I called them gangsters. What more can I do? Say it again? What, am I going to get a halo for this? You don't know already what's true, that both parties are criminals? 99% of both parties are run by gangsters. It may as well be Mexico. It may as well be living in Mexico. What do you have faith in any of this? You think anyone's going to suffer? They're going to take money away from these criminals? They are the same. They give them the money back. It's a cycle.
The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
I don't even want to get excited over any of it. Could you play, instead of that version, could you play the woman who sang it, who I met in the elevator in the Green Street Garage 30 years ago before she became a psychic? That's right, that one. I don't know about her name. She did a better job. I know, joke. She did a better version. He wrote it, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, another Pied Piper led millions of people off the cliff of insanity. Turn that off, too. How about Pantera? Let's get some hard metal, heavy metal playing here. I haven't done that in a while on Savage Nation. Nothing's moving me. What's wrong with me today? Try Rammstein. Let's see if that does anything for me on the Savage Nation. Since no one cares about communism in America, I'm going to play. That's better. Now, why does that move me? Loud as a man.
Strauber Gold und Gold wird Stein. Deine Größe macht mich klein. Du darfst mein Bestraffer sein.
When it comes to heavy metal, I'm a, shall I say, sound queen. Why is that funny? I don't know. It struck me as funny. He's back in Canada in a ballet costume. About as funny as Jackie Mason pumping iron. I mean, come on.
Bestrafe mich. Bestrafe mich.
Be as funny as Ann Coulter playing Martha Washington.
Und ich denk, nein.
Anyone like January Jones in Mad Men?
Before I
like Grace Kelly. How does anyone have a name like January Jones? I can't hear real name. It's like a radio name, January Jones. What's your name? January. Hello? Stunning. But, all right, turn it off already. I'll talk about anything other than politics. I can't take it anymore. And the reason I can't take it is because you've got criminals and gangsters running America. and you actually don't even know it. I mean, it's unbelievable to me. You actually listen to a word they say, and you don't know who they are, what they're doing. It's unbelievable. You don't read it. You didn't read It Can't Happen Here by Sinclair Lewis, so you don't know that there's a gang that has taken over America. I read it to you once before. It went over your heads, under your heads, under your feet, in your arms, you know, in the T-zone. It hit you in the T-zone, and you let it go right through you. Should I read it again? Nah, I don't think it matters. I think it's over. I think it's all over, basically. I see 20 years from now, everyone playing checkers, houses unplugged from the grid. In other words, Cuba. All 50 states sort of like a Cuba. No economy, houses that are fading, no paint on the houses, no services, spies on every block, answering only to Obama and his SA. And anyone who speaks out is either taken to a prison camp or shot, disappeared. And you wouldn't even care because at that point it'll be too late. No one will be left to say a word. That's where this leads. He's a young man yet. Remember that. The old communists that he used to get into power will be gone. And they're rather moderate compared to him. This guy's an extremist, in my opinion. Maybe I should read for you Sinclair Lewis's It Can't Happen Here about the nightmarish vision of a future in America where a right-wing party emerges that takes over America. But everything he said about a dictatorship arising from the right did not happen. But now we have a tyranny of a dictatorship that has arisen under Barack Hussein Obama. And since it's only 6 months into it, and they're doing it rather, you know, boiling pot method, you know, you don't even see what's happening here. The big linchpin here is the health care thing. If he gets away with this, it's over. He will control you from the cradle to the grave, and you will be dependent upon the government from cradle to grave for your medication and for your medical care. And at that point, the economy, I would say this represents not one-seventh of the economy, because there are no limits on what people can demand from the system, and because this communist government will want to expand their power and control through the medical system, it could become 30% of GDP to pay for this. So it could be one-third of the economy devoted to health care. Federal costs will actually drive up the cost of health care. So if I made these points yesterday, and if you learn today that Obama makes private medical insurance illegal, which it does, came out in Investor's Business Daily, what more do you need to know?
Savage.
Have you heard of the Millionaire Patriot? He has a free handgun and 5 days of firearms training waiting for you. You can attend 5 days of world-class gun training at Front Sight Firearms Training Institute and secure a 30-state concealed weapons permit. Plus, if you act fast, the Millionaire Patriot will give you a free Springfield Armory XD pistol in the caliber of your choice. Now is the time you need to be armed and trained to levels that exceed law enforcement and military standards. Front Sight provides such training without boot camp mentality or drill instructor attitudes. Thousands have already taken advantage. Get a Front Sight defensive handgun course plus 30-state concealed weapons permit and get your free handgun at the Institute. Here's how to make it happen. Just go to the website frontsight.com today. That's Front, SIGHT.com. Go to frontsight.com for your training and free gun. Some restrictions apply.
Savage.
Me, Michael Savage, in charge of Homeland Security, I arrest them on return to the country. I arrest every lawyer coming back from Guantanamo, and I investigate them for ties to terrorism. You ought to thank your lucky stars that I don't want to be a politician. You red diaper dopa baby rats. If it was me, I'd arrest you on return from Gitmo. You American lawyers going down there to undermine this country and embarrass us, I'd put you in jail, and I'd throw the key away.
Savage.
They all said about the same thing. You tell the truth. I said, what do you mean I tell the truth? Well, I don't have to agree with everything you say, but at least I know what to think based upon what you're saying to me. I don't hear BS from you, meaning you're expressing what you believe to be true, and that's good enough for me because we're living in a world of bullcrap. Everyone's lying to us. Everything's done with a focus group. Everything's done with a finger in the air to see which way the wind is blowing before they say it. You say it the way you see it, and people, common people, like that.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Musings on this, on that, on here, on there, whatever. I'm bored out of my gourd. I'm tired. Summertime. I should be on vacation. Except I hate vacations. I just went on one and I'm exhausted from it. I couldn't wait to get home. Why does anyone go on a vacation? I could see not working. That I could understand. But you know when you get to where you're going, you're unhappy there anyway. The bed's no good. The food's no good. You got to listen to strangers. Don't you wince around? Well, when the kids are young, you're obliged to go on vacations for their sake. But they hate it as well. A young child doesn't know where they are. That you got to understand. If they're well fed and they're in front of a fire hydrant in the Bronx in 1944 in the street, they could be in the Palace of Versailles. It wouldn't matter to them if they're running in a bathing suit in the street, as I did, with the fire hydrant open before the PC police closed down the fire hydrants. That was our swimming pool. It was Longfellow Avenue with a fire hydrant, with the smiling father standing by. They had a wrench. They opened the fire hydrant. The kids had a good summer. You didn't have to go, with a suspension of vacation. But all right, things change. So now you go on vacation. The kids don't want to be with you. And for those of you who have children, by the way, the worst is yet to come. Let's say they're young. That's okay because they don't know better yet. You try taking children who are between the ages of 13 and 15 on a vacation when you still think that they're children and they're not and their minds are elsewhere. It is like taking a strange couple on a trip, buying them airfare, buying them every meal, and having them not talk to you. Play Cannonball Adderley. I'll start the show in a minute. I have no idea why I just talked about that. No, I don't want to hear it anymore. It's too tooty. Play A-Train. Give me an A-Train job. Come on. Come on. Come on. Come on. Quicker on the uptake, Johnson. Let's go. A-Train. I never saw anything like this. There should be a button you press. You're not actually going for a record, are you? They're lost today. Lost in the ethers of the radio land. How can I do a show without quickness? What, did we lose the connection? That was only an hour. You know what that was to me? The average was 15 seconds to me was like a year. The mood is gone already. I'm finished. The 9-year-old boy in a polo shirt on a hot July day reaches into the Coca-Cola ice box, not refrigerator. Big pieces of ice are floating in the water. His arm turns blue as he fishes for the soda on the bottom of the box. Most of them have been taken by the... You want me to do nostalgia today? What do you want me to do? Politics? Who talks about politics in late July except a lunatic on MSNBC? An idiot who knows nothing. Imagine they put on now. They're reaching the bottom of the barrel. Why is that guy not in Martha's Vineyard kissing Obama's behind? Why is he on MSNBC? I told you he was going to Martha's Vineyard. I knew that. All of the big libs, all the gonfs, the bigger the gonf, the bigger the house on Martha's Vineyard. The bigger the banking crook, the larger the home on Martha's Vineyard. See, Obama never worked in a factory. He was just picked by some powerful people in the world to become president. But he says the top income earners are just lucky. But you may not know it, but this lucky talk show host once worked in an ice cream factory. Let me explain to you what it's like. It's probably the worst job in the world, being on a production line in a factory. I should remind you, it's a tough job. And you have to have compassion and sympathy for poor people or people who don't speak the language who take these jobs. It's murder. It was in Long Island City, and it was an ice cream factory, and it was a hot summer. And the production line goes around on a conveyor belt. And I and a few of my friends worked in that factory along with, I think it was Puerto Rican women, by the way, largely on the production line. And the pit boss was an Italian, about 5'1", with a big mouth and mean. And he stood up on a platform over the production, the conveyor belt. So the boxes would come around, and you had, I don't know, whatever the numbers or seconds were, to pack 24 ice cream bars into the box. And you had to do it in a certain amount of time. Now, if you fumbled, you had to do this for hours on end. And let's say your mind was elsewhere, which it normally is, but you missed and dropped the bar. And he would stop the line, this guy up on the stand, and he'd start screaming, "You moron, you idiot. Look what you did to all the other workers, you stupid moron, you. You do it again, you're costing them money. Now start the line again." See, that's how America worked. When America was really good, we had guys like that pit boss who could call you a moron when you were an idiot or a moron, your mind was distracted. Today, of course, you can't call anyone a moron, even if they're a moron. Instead, you turn them into a home secretary in England, or you turn them into a senator or a congressman here from Minnesota. But that's how it worked in those days. I also had a teacher like that. He was an ex. We think he was an IRA member. We don't know. I won't mention his name. Jamaica High School, missing three fingers in the left hand, as Irish as they come, heavy brogue, wonderful teacher, math teacher. I remember to this day, he would read out your grades at the end of a test. He'd call your name out and make you come up to the front as he read the name, the grades in descending order. And believe me, if you got less than an 80 and you were called to that, by the time they got to you, you were sweating, you were red-faced, you grew pimples on your face in the 3 minutes it took for you to get up to that room. And you know what he said? Well, you didn't do too well, did you, this time with a 68? Where was your mind? Up your behind? You know, and he'd go on, he'd lace into you. And let me tell you something. When he got through with you, you didn't want to get a 68 on the next exam. You studied harder. But today, they'd arrest him for student abuse. I take you back to another time in America. Let us say when John F. Kennedy was president, when a Democrat was more conservative than today's Republicans. You understand what I just said to you? Do you realize, and I've said this for over 10 years now, that by today's standards, the Republican Party has moved so far to the left and so lost its bearings that John F. Kennedy, by today's standards, would be a conservative compared to the Republicans of today. And, of course, the Democrats today are the communists or the neo-Marxists. They don't even understand where they are, nor do they care. They don't care where they are politically. They do not care at all. Neither do I at this point. They're sinking as fast as the 51st Ward can sink. The American people, it's sinking into the American people that Obama is basically a front man for the Daily Machine and that they're treating the White House as though it's the 51st Ward of Chicago. In other words, it's entered their mind already. So here we are. Now, I'm telling you, I'm taking you back in time. So I'm reading biographies. Hemingway is one of my heroes, etc., and so on. And I, you know, read The New Yorker. There were other magazines that were out that I was reading. I forget them, but I'm running so short of time I could scream. First of all, I have a migraine today from the weekend. That's to start with. I ate too much radicchio last night, which is so acidic, I'll never eat it again. Can they serve me lettuce? Why do I have to eat? Everything's a trick. When I grew up, there was vinegar. Now everything's a trick vinegar. $5,000 a bottle, like wine now. Why does everything have to be special? You ask for a cup of coffee, you got coffee in my day. Now it's 50 different varieties. The same garbage with different prices. Mochiata, macchiata, lacamata, lacawana, choo-choo. What do I have to eat radicchio for? I have a migraine from the acid. So I'm in a bad mood to begin with. I'm going to play for you a piece of the interview on the podcast of the author of the article, Party of One, Profiler Michael Savage. Profiler Michael Savage by Mr. Senna. Right now from the New Yorker on the Savage Nation, fire
Michael
away.
Savage is one of the most popular conservative talk radio hosts in the country. His show, The Savage Nation, reaches more than 8 million listeners each week.
We so-called conservatives are actually the liberals of America. And the so-called liberals are the actual fascists of America.
Savage's disdain for the left is savage. One of his many books is called Liberalism is a Mental Disorder. But listeners to his show get a lot more than politics, as Khalif Hassanah tells us in his profile this week. Welcome back, Kay.
Thanks.
So the election of Barack Obama has put conservatives back in the opposition, and that has re-energized talk radio. Is that what got you interested in doing this piece? And why did you pick Michael Savage of all the conservative talk show hosts?
That's part of what got me interested in doing this piece. I'd heard him over the years and found myself listening to him a bunch last year during the election. And he was interesting partly because he seemed to be so off message.
Oh, I know what you're expecting, but you're not going to get it from me. You'll have to go to one of the other talk show hosts to get. Obama's a Marxist and McCain is a war hero. If that's what you want from now until November, you're in the wrong you're on the wrong dial position.
Savage, despite being identified as a conservative talk show host, didn't really seem to like McCain that much. Mm-hmm. Definitely hated Obama. Didn't really like Bush.
So he was reacting really differently than the other conservative hosts.
Well, you know, most of the other conservative hosts, no matter what the problems they might have had with McCain, mm-hmm. were they certainly supported him.
Right.
And Savage really didn't. But Savage has always been a really kind of unusual, weird guy. His radio show isn't like anyone else's radio show.
Right. So he talks a lot less about politics than a lot of other talk show hosts.
Well, he's a lot less single-minded. He has this weird cluster of interests. He's interested in herbal medicine. Mm-hmm. He's interested in animals. He loves food. He loves to tell stories about, you know, New York in the 50s and 60s. And he loves to talk about his life in a really unusual way. He has this kind of melancholy, depressive streak. And so the takeaway isn't necessarily, you know, we're going to rally the troops and we're going to get this done politically. The takeaway is often, I'm probably going to go home and drink tonight. And that makes him a really interesting, really compelling character on the radio.
When the New Yorker comes up on a show like Savage's or Rush's, it's generally not in glowing terms. No. Michael Savage is, my guess, not a longtime subscriber to the magazine.
Well, he is a longtime reader.
He is.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
He grew up in New York, and he has said he did grow up reading.
Savage.
But I want to tell you something. Michael Savage defied this trend. Now, that's a big story. You won't read that anywhere because they hate my guts in the media. I don't exist. They refer to people who no one ever heard of in talk radio, but that's the way it is, and I've lived with it all my life, and I'm used to it. I'm like a salmon who's used to swimming upstream. So at the end of the day, it doesn't matter to me. I've spawned, and I'll lay eggs until I die. They won't. They never got to swim. Most of them have no fins. My publicist called me and said, Savage, why is it that people in the conservative media hate you so much? But you're all on the same side. You're all supposedly fighting the socialist menace. I said, don't believe that for a minute. These people are Republican water boys. That is how they get them on their show. Because I am not a Republican water carrier, because I will not toe the party line, they are acting like Dan Rather used to act, and they think that they're going to kill my book. Well, I don't need them.
Savage.
Savage Nation. It's an unusual show today. I'm not doing much politics. I'll do that maybe later. I'll do it tomorrow. We're talking instead about a profile of Michael Savage entitled Party of One by Kalefa Sena. It's a major league profile in league with people I've respected in my life, such as Fellini, Gandhi, Albert Einstein, Dizzy Gillespie, Martin Scorsese. I know you say, what, are you crazy? No, maybe you're crazy. Maybe you're crazy for not understanding who you've been listening to all these years. To understand that although I'm a independent conservative politically, that's not really what the show is about necessarily. That's a hard part of what it's about, sure. But you can hear that everywhere. Today you got a lot of conservatives in the media, right? What you get from me is a lot more and a lot different. The melancholy, depressive streak that the author mentions appealed to me. It made me laugh. Why did that make me laugh when he said, there's not, he's not like the others, there's a melancholy, depressive streak in him? Why did I laugh when I heard that? I don't know why, because I have a weird sense of humor. He also said Michael Savage is weird. I like that. It made me happy. You understand this? Do you get an idea what I'm talking about? We now go back to the podcast. Is that what they call it these days? Is it podcast? Podcast. There's something about the word pod that I don't like. It reminds me of all those science fiction movies, you know, where the pod people are coming. We now go back to the podcast of the author of the article Party of One about Michael Savage, Unexpurgated by Kalefa Sena. Listen.
Savage, despite being identified as a conservative talk show host, didn't really seem to like McCain that much.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely hated Obama. Didn't really like Bush.
So he was reacting really differently than the other conservative hosts.
Well, you know, most of the other conservative hosts, no matter what the problems they might have had with McCain, were they certainly supported him.
Right.
And Savage really didn't. But Savage has always been a really kind of unusual, weird guy. His radio show isn't like anyone else's radio show.
Right. So he talks a lot less about politics than a lot of other talk show host.
Well, he's a lot less single-minded. He has this weird cluster of interests. He's mm-hmm. interested in herbal medicine. Mm-hmm. He's interested in animals. He loves food. He loves to tell stories about, you know, New York in the 50s and 60s. And he loves to talk about his life in a really unusual way. He has this kind of melancholy, depressive streak. And, mm-hmm. and so the takeaway isn't necessarily, you know, we're going to rally the troops and we're going to get this done politically. The takeaway is often, I'm probably going to go home and drink tonight. And, and that makes him a really interesting, really compelling character on the radio.
Mm-hmm. When the New Yorker comes up on a show like Savage's or Rush's, it's generally not in glowing terms. No. Michael Savage is, my guess, not a longtime subscriber to the magazine.
Well, he is a longtime reader.
He is?
Yeah,
oh, I mean, okay.
He grew up in New York, and mm-hmm. he has said he did grow up reading it.
So how hard was it to get him to talk to you, and how did you go about that?
Well, basically, I sent a bunch of emails to his people and finally got an email back from him. He mm-hmm. writes, all the emails I've ever gotten from him, I think, have been in all caps. And he was kind of like, what do you want? And so I kind of explained to him that I wanted to write a story about him, that I listened to his show, that I enjoyed his show. I think every email I wrote him, he read on the air.
Wow.
And so it was this weird kind of three-way conversation where I'd write him again in response to the discussion that I'd heard on the air. It was pretty strange. I think we have a clip of him describing one of the emails he sent back to me after I had written him asking him to please talk to me.
So I sent him this note and I said, the cartoon that goes with the story, will it show me in the Gestapo or an SA uniform? Surely you don't believe I don't know what you want to try to make of me. Why must everyone in journalism be so obvious? Why must all of you in the extreme media paint everyone you disagree with as demonic?
No, in fact, when I read your piece, I didn't think he came off as demonic at all.
When I actually finally kind of convinced him that, you know, we should sit down and talk and it wasn't going to destroy his career, you know, it was this kind of surreal thing because we had a great time. And, mm-hmm. we had some beers and we sat on his porch and he's a great host mm-hmm. and he was fun to talk to. I'd like to think he enjoyed the conversation. And I think there's something about him that some part of him that thought it was really funny. On the radio the next day after the interview, one of the callers asked how it went,
right.
And he described me as looking a little bit like Obama, which which coming from him, I think, was a deeply twisted kind of compliment.
We're not going to play extended clips of him on this podcast, but it sounds like from your piece, part of what's interesting is kind of where he goes in the extended form.
One of the things Michael Savage does better than just about anyone is he really exploits the medium of radio and the fact that his show is happening in real time and that you're hearing his thought process in real time. One of my favorite segments ever came when, you know, he was doing a show and during the break, someone sent him an envelope with a photograph of his father who died many decades ago. And this threw Michael Savage off completely. It was amazing to hear those things kind of battling in his head, to hear him sort of trying to stay on topic, but getting thrown off topic by this picture in his hands.
Isn't it interesting how they love Islam? They can't get enough of it. They're experts in the Sunni sect, the Shia sect. Now you see, I'm what do you call it when you talk and talk and he looked good. Look at this. I can't get it out of my head. I shouldn't have looked at these pictures. He was, God bless him. A lot of good it did him, the wife. Black hair, thin, kept in shape and dead.
So, you know, it's funny, but there's a real, you know, there's a real sense of loss and melancholy there, too. And there's something about the way he kind of lays himself bare on the radio that's, to me at least, riveting.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't think of another political show where someone is so personal about their life.
Yeah. And so willing to go wherever free association takes them.
Well, that's the first part of the podcast of the New Yorker profile, Party of One, Michael Savage, Unexpurgated. I got to say to you, I'm enjoying this. I hope that you will forgive me my indulgence. And what I'd like you to do is buy the New Yorker magazine. When you see the issue, it says the August 3rd edition. Why don't you show the liberal establishment that you are, you're conservative, but you read? Go out and buy the magazine. I don't make anything from it, but you can make a statement.
Savage.
It's a soul, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? All right. Now we're going to play this by Bobby Timmons. It's really called This Here. However, for reasons of soul and description, we have corrupted it to become Dish Here.
Ah.
Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Right now, I'd like to take some calls from you at 1-800-449-8255. That's my phone number. From anywhere in the United States of America and England, 1-800-449-8255. Is that my number? What do you think thus far of the podcast of the author of Party of One by Khalef Asena? I got to tell you, I enjoyed the meeting with him. He's a great guy. I didn't know how it would turn out in advance. But if you have any comments thus far, I'd like you to call me at 1-800-449-8255. This is something I think mainly women are going to call about. I think mainly women read The New Yorker. I'm joking. No, it's kind of like a woman thing to like have The New Yorker. But when I was a kid and like, there were kids who had a little more money. They had The New Yorker in the house. We didn't have The New Yorker. We had the Daily News, the Mirror. But like, if you were really like, you made a little more money, you had a New York, the New Yorker, and you heard the parents talking about like what was in the theater and movies from the New Yorker. But since my family didn't go to theater, I don't either. By the way, I'm not putting them down. I hate the theater. Despise it. Nothing against you if you're an actor. I love acting. I prefer movies. In fact, I have another friend who's a genius, and I had a greasy Chinese lunch with him yesterday. I said, let me ask you something. Do you go to the opera or symphony or the theater? No, he said, I hate it. He said, I like to go home at night and lock the doors like you do and watch movies. I said, to me, theater predates Edison. I mean, it predates the motion picture. Why would I want to sit in the theater with someone passing gas in front of me or, you know, perfume or a cough job? Right? I mean, do I want to sit around people coughing and with bad smell? You know, people do smell, and I'm real sensitive. I have a big problem with my sense of smell. I admit it's a disability, but I don't like the scent of other human beings around me. I react to them. That's the point. I have a sixth sense with scent that I can hear things others can't hear. I know you think I'm making it up. I'm not. I can hear things. I'm tuned into stuff aisles and aisles away. I don't like listening. I'm distracted. In my bedroom, I can control the environment. It's like a theater. It's like radio. Why do you think I love radio? It's a controlled environment, right? Lock the doors, turn on the ISDN. It's me and the dog, and I have almost total control unless the system breaks down. So you get what I'm saying or not? Whatever. I think it's a very good article. If you don't like it, we'll move on. We'll talk about Obama. We're going, oh, yeah, I'm not talking about Obama. You know everything you need to know about him and more. He's a front man for the Daily Machine in Chicago. It's the 51st Ward. They could care less about America. They don't care if they bankrupt you or turn you over to the enemy as long as they can stuff their pockets. Is there any more I need to say about it? It makes the most corrupt presidency in American history look like a patriotic group. What would you like to talk about? I'd like to talk about this. Right now I'm only talking about this. Bob in New York, WOR, go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
Michael, we have so much in common, although I'm younger than you are. Guess what? It's that Eastern European heritage. It's that dark melancholy that makes me what I am, makes you what
That's
you
right.
Are.
What am I going to hide it and be cheerful and sunny?
You do carry the weight on your shoulder, but that, guess what? That's what we were made for. But you know what?
Here's the whole thing is, why do I have to be cheerful? Where is it written that a man is supposed to go through life smiling like a dunce?
Well, that's why you have Stan Getz and the Oscar Peterson trio. And when you feel
But you
that-
know, you know, no, let's go to some other realities here. Let's talk about men from other cultures. You look at men from Russia before they become Americanized. Do they walk around with a fixed smile on their face?
No, they walk around
Look at the men from Mexico. Take a look at their faces, with or without the gangland tattoos? Do they walk around the streets smiling? No, they walk around with a grimness. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, well, that's the nature of human beings. They're grim. The smile is an add-on from a life with father.
And you're exactly.
So, in other words, you're a lifetime depressive. You're on medication.
Hey, I'm from the same place.
No, level with me. Are you on medication?
No.
Neither am I. See, I raged against it all my life. Just because you are grim and melancholic doesn't mean you're sick. And by the way, just because a person has complexity doesn't mean that they're conflicted. This is something you have to understand. If you read this profile of me, which I hope many of you will do by buying the magazine, you're going to see things that apparently are conflicted, but they're not conflicted. What they are is complex. And you have to understand that you can be complex without being in conflict. See, in our society today, men are being driven, men and women, of course, are being driven into becoming either one thing or another. Are you a liberal or are you a conservative? Are you white? Are you black? Are you Hispanic or are you Asian? Are you for or are you against? Well, that's not what human beings are. Human beings are a blend of things. Human beings are complex, and only in recent times do we see a desire to hammer us all into one thing or the other. You get it?
I get it.
Sorry, I'm sure you do. So what I'm saying is I'm from another time. I got to admit it. I am not this. I am not that. I'm this and that. I am neither here. I am neither there. I'm here and there. In other words, you can make of me what you want. And so you can say, well, therefore, what are you? I'll say, I'll let you decide. Because you can demonize me, as many people do in the media, because what they do is they take words I say out of context and turn them into the whole me. That's not who I am. That's what they did to me in England. They took words that I said, twisted them, took them out of context, and they made me into the equivalent of a murderer who actually killed people. Is that who I am? Have I ever killed anybody? No. You understand what I'm saying to you? So this fellow who did the profile of me in the New Yorker, I think understands what I just said better than anybody who's ever interviewed me. In fact, right now, if I have a minute or two, I'm going to read a few more pieces from the profile of Michael Savage from The New Yorker. Savage abhors animal cruelty, though not as much as he abhors the animal rights movement. And as many listeners know, his interest in the natural world predates his identity as a firebrand. He is a scientist by training, and before he became a talk show host, he was the author of more than a dozen books on alternative medicine. Somehow the years of research made him not a chipper health nut, but a melancholy fatalist, all too aware that every day brings with it a new dose of poison for his beleaguered body. Quote, theoretically, when I get off the air, I should go run, I should walk, I should bicycle, I should do a treadmill, he told his listeners, while lamenting that he never followed his own advice. He offered a synopsis of the night before, quote, the worst thing you could do is go to dinner. I went to dinner. The second worst thing you could do is have two drinks. I had two beers. The third worst thing you could do is come right home and watch television. I came right home and watched television. I didn't sleep a minute last night. One nightmare after another. He sighed. I'll do the same thing again tonight. So he gets the humor, okay? He gets the gestalt of Michael Savage. But I want to go back to some other parts of it that really are funny. Earlier this year, Savage found himself at the center of a strange international incident. After the British government announced, seemingly out of the blue, that he was on a list of 22 hate promoters who had recently been banned from entering the country. On his show that day, he played God Save the Queen by the Sex Pistols and said, the punks had it right. There is no future in England. This punk rock interlude would not have surprised Savage's regular listeners, who know him to be, more days than not, a marvelous storyteller, a quirky thinker, and an incorrigible free associator. He sometimes sounds less like a political commentator than like the star of a riveting and unusually vivid one-man play. He frequently dumps callers even... even sympathetic ones, after about a sentence and a half, or a fugitive character out of a Philip Roth novel. Savage seems resigned to the fact that the majority of Americans, including many of his own listeners, just don't get it, just don't get him, and never will. He is a permanent resident of the political wilderness, sending daily dispatches back to the diseased civilization that the rest of us call home. Come on. I haven't read writing as good as this in years. I mean, some of it's not complimentary that's coming up, believe me. And some of it's wrong. There's some errors in here. But the writing is superb. Kay, you did a good job thus far. Let me continue here. I got a minute. When President Obama went to Britain for the G20 summit, Savage devoted a good portion of his show to the dinner menu. He scoffed at the vegetarian options. And then he wondered aloud whether a Bakewell tart was, quote, a lady from one of the side streets. Probably Jackie Smith. And expounded upon his hatred for Irish soda bread, saying, I don't know what the big deal is. It's full of butter and cream. Yuck, very high rate of heart attack in Ireland. All this talk about food made him think about dinner. So he read the menu from a local seafood restaurant. He took exception to the tilapia. That's like pond grown. That's the worst. And to the oyster shooter, quote, it sounds like a dirty thing to order. He then turned his attention to the frog's legs. He wondered, how could you not feel bad for the frog when you eat that? He compared eating frog's legs to eating chicken. And soon he was immersed in a philosophical soliloquy about his beloved gray poodle, Teddy. My dog is only 11 pounds. What's shocking to me is that my dog's hind quarter, I looked at it the other day when he got wet. I looked at his leg. It looked like a large chicken leg. I got frightened. So I said, how could you eat a chicken and savor it? And the dogs, I can't do it. And I say, then your mind starts running. If you have a kaleidoscopic mind like I do, like what if you were starving, would you eat Teddy? Don't even think about it. I mean, you think about these things. Would you eat him? How would you eat him? Stop it, your mind.
Savage.
I hope you've all gotten a prayer rug by now. Just try it on for size. Can't knock it if you haven't tried it. We're not suggesting you pray to Mecca every day, but we suggest that you put one hand and one foot on the prayer rug at least once a day. You could watch TV. Just get used to it. Experiment. You may decide you like praying, you know. And if you don't like what I'm saying, it shows how bigoted you are. That's all. Americans are generally a very tolerant people. Even American-style tolerance has its limits. And I believe millions of Americans have reached theirs unless we take control of the left-wing groups who are abusing the media, the courts, and the church, and schools, and police, abusing the military. We Americans will suffer a loss of freedom and liberty because of an authoritarianism that will arise in this country.
Savage.
Haven't to have not. I know that that's not the exact German translation. Sounds like to have it to have not. Whatever. It is the Savage Nation. You're listening to the music of Rammstein, which is good. Nine. My lucky number, nine. All right, turn it off. Now, let's move on. So I'm telling you what happened. The article comes out in the New Yorker. I'm expecting the worst because I'm defensive about the media, and I had no idea which way it was going to go. And the reason I agreed to the interview is because I knew he was going to do it anyway. And I figured, you know, I know one thing about myself, which is that no matter what people think of me from a distance, when they meet me and spend time with me, they come away with a different view because I'm not what they heard about. I'm a different person. They have no idea the depth of my background, my learning, etc., nor the humanity that they feel. So anyway, I say, I'll take a chance. Guy comes out, blah, blah, blah. I liked him. I didn't know whether it was going to be good or bad. I had no idea. My instincts were take a chance on the guy because he was, listen to why. He was a jazz writer for the New York, the reporter, the writer rather, the journalist, whatever you want to call him. He was a jazz writer for the New York Times for 7 years. Now, anyone who writes on jazz is a man who listens to the music. So anyone who has an ear to listen to jazz is capable of understanding subtlety, capable of understanding chord changes, variations. So I figure, okay, if he's listening this carefully to my show, his appearance, as his emails seem to reflect, then he must really be hearing me. And I was right, don't you understand? I took a chance, gambled on a human being, And I was right. It wasn't a hit piece. But the way it left me was like I fell off Mount Olympus. Or it's more like the myth of Sisyphus in reverse. I got to the top. Instead of having pushed the rock up again, I fell down the other side.
Savage.
You know, I was thinking about this the other day. Take a guy like Red Skelton. You may remember him. You may not. Played a clown. Did a good job. I loved him as a kid. Didn't know much about him. As it turned out, the man painted. He painted schlocky paintings of clowns. What'd he paint? 1,000 clown pictures? What was he trying to do? I thought about it the other day as a grown man. What do you think he was doing? He was trying to paint the clowns out of his own head. You see what I'm saying? In other words, there was a higher part of Red Skelton. In order for him to perform at all, there had to be a brilliant high element within him, something spiritually higher, right? To be a performer like that. Because he didn't use dirty words. He didn't do anything with filthy, dirty language in order to get a laugh out of an audience. He actually used comedy to attract people, unlike the dirtbags on Showtime and HBO today. Every other word is F or MF or F and MF, 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 F, 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 MF. What'd you say? MF, 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 MF. What'd you say? MF, MF. What'd you say? F. That's HBO's idea of comedy. Every other word, and that's not comedy. It's insanity. But Red Skelton didn't have to do that, so there was a higher element with him. But the clown he had to use inside himself to hit those notes. But he was depressed that he had to be a clown to get the audience to listen. He probably would rather have been the higher element within himself. Does this make sense to you? See, painted clowns all his life. I think to rid his mind of the clowns, you'd call them, what do they call them today? Everything they have a psychological word for, and they give you a drug to turn you into a Democrat. What would you call it today? Not the ghosts. In my day, they called it the shadow. Huh? No. Not psychological terms. So they say inner demons. Now, everything's an inner demon. In other words, everything that's a human being, oh, he's got an inner demon, take a pill, come back in 3 months, take another one. We'll see if that doesn't put down the psychosis. We'll give you another one. It'll create the psychosis. What inner demon? It's inner selves. I recognized at age 18 through self-analysis for 5 straight years that if you peel away the onion and keep peeling away the onion of your own self, at the middle of it, you're going to find nothing. At the center of it all, there's nothing. So why peel anymore? So you pack the onion back up and you march forward and that's it. What are you looking for inside? There's nothing there. Hello? Keep knocking. Keep a knocking, but you can't come in. Do you have that song for me right now? Keep, because I know I'm going to get slammed now already with it. Know my God is within. Keep looking within and you'll find God within the center of yourself. All right. Yeah, I know. Jimmy Carter thought he met him in his living room because of the strychnine. I mean, that family drank enough strychnine for the guy to become the peacenik he is. You talk about the average person has nothing on the inside. The Jimmy Carter family with the strychnine and the snakes. And seeing his lord and master in a living room, I don't know what he was wearing. I don't know, trousers, tweeds, a tuxedo. Who's this? Keep a knocking, but you can't.
Knocking. I hear you knocking. Go back where you've been.
She a stripper. She worked for LBJ in the back. Gail Storm was a stripper for LBJ, wasn't she? I don't know. Now I grew up on, like, Argosy magazine. Gail Storm was a stripper. Who's Gail Storm? Turn it off.
Savage.
Savage. When the American moron takes his backwards hat and turns it around and realizes that we're too late in time to start talking about baseball scores and what some putz in a striped suit did yesterday and start talking about the survival issues that confront this nation when every overgrown schmuck child who cares about baseball and football and basketball wakes up and takes on the mantle of adulthood will have a chance of surviving as a nation.
Michael Savage, now more than ever.
What is a man over 35 affording a sports car for? How shall I put it? It's like Viagra on wheels, a sports car, in your own head. They're 50 years old. He's in heaven. He's driving around. He's got a sun in his face. All the pollen you could ever ask for, all the carbon monoxide. He thinks the whole world is looking at him and that every woman wants to leap out of her SUV and abandon her children and jump in the seat next to him, huh? God, these men!
Attention diabetics. If you are covered by Medicare,
free home delivery of your testing supplies is a phone call away. We make it easy and convenient. No more trips to the pharmacy, no more paperwork, and no upfront costs. We provide free delivery of diabetic testing supplies to thousands of patients nationwide. Medicare patients will receive a free meter with the newest alternate site testing technology with your first order. Finally, pain-free fingers are a phone call away. 800-605-1680. 800-605-1680. Advanced Medical Support is America's choice for free home delivery of diabetic testing supplies to Medicare patients. Call now. 800-605-1680. 800-605-1680. That's 800-605-1680.
Are you living the kind of lifestyle you'd like to be living, or just getting by? Wouldn't it be better if you were earning more and had total control over your financial future? This is Roger Pasquier. I became a millionaire at age 23, doubled it by 33, and retired at 43. How did I do it? By finding good ideas and then taking action to make money. Now in my search for new opportunities, I've found one of the best ideas I've ever seen, and I want to share it with you. Not earning what you think you should be, or maybe you have the desire to become an entrepreneur and do your own thing, then this is for you. Here's an idea so powerful that it can generate an income equal to a CEO salary, and you can do it from the comfort of your own home. Write this number down now, 1-800-447-9848. We've already helped thousands increase their earnings dramatically. Generate a new income stream starting today. Call now, 1-800-447-9848. That's 1-800-447-9848.
Has credit card debt ravaged your financial stability or your home life? Fresh Start America can help. In fact, they can eliminate up to 60% of your credit card debt. They negotiate with your creditors, reduce your debt, cut years off your payments, and stop the debt cycle. It's a proven solution. They're friendly, caring professionals who won't judge you or talk down to you. You'll get your questions answered and your debt forgiven. Avoid bankruptcy, cut your debt by thousands, and enjoy life again. Imagine taking your credit card bills and cutting them in half. If you have over $10,000 in credit card debt, call for a free consultation. There's absolutely no cost or obligation. Call now. 800-307-4094. That's 800-307-4094. Not available in all states, including South Carolina. Call us at 800-307-4094. That's 800-307-4094.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
All right, welcome back to the Savage Nation. We're not talking about the beer garden party at the White House. We're going to talk about, well, I'm sorry to tell you, me. As some of you may know, a major profile appeared in the New Yorker magazine entitled Party of One, Michael Savage and Onyx Brigaded. And it was written by Khalifa Senna, who joins us now from New York City. Kay, welcome to the Savage Nation. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Good to talk to you again.
Now, I didn't know that you as a writer would, you know, break away from the normal shyness of a writer and appear on radio. I'm glad you did. My first question to you is this. Who do you think has lost more friends or listeners or readers, you or me?
I can't say I've experienced any personal backlash. I've gotten a few emails from people I know who say, I listen to that show, too. I love that show. I can't believe you're
Oh, the secret Savage listeners amongst the liberal the liberal intelligentsia. What has the response been from readers of The New Yorker? Forget your friends, if we may, for a minute.
You know, the emails I've seen have mainly been positive. It's possible that they haven't been forwarding the negative ones to me. I'm not sure.
Sounds like my guys. What made you, you know, I said to my audience that the reason I went with your interview, even though I was skittish to do so, and you know it, because I was gun shy from previous experiences with people who made me think that they liked me or, you know, really wanted to do a real story, is that you had been a jazz, you were a jazz writer for the New York Times for years. Isn't that true?
It's funnier than that. I was a music critic for the New York Times, but one of the main things I actually wrote about was hip hop, which is
yeah.
A world apart in one sense, but similar only in that a lot of rappers are people who are used to being attacked for various reasons in the media, and I was someone who kind of appreciated what they did with words. So if there's any connection, I guess that would be it.
Well, did you hear my rap at the beginning of the show called "I Have Tattoos on My Soul"?
I did. Are you looking for a record contract?
Well, I may move into that medium one day. So you were a music critic for the New York Times. I figured you actually listened to the music and didn't focus solely on the musician. And I figured, well, if you actually listen, you must be hearing what I'm actually saying. What was the most surprising item thing that you found out about me that you didn't think you'd find out about in doing this story?
That's a good question.
Okay, that I like Beck's beer.
No, I think it was that when I hear you on the radio, it's so vivid the way you talk, and there's so much passion. And to be honest, I was kind of expecting that, you know, when we sat down and when we were just discussing things, just us two, part of me kind of suspected that you'd be maybe different. That maybe the radio persona would seem like it was kind of just a persona, and then I'm talking to you in person, and I'm getting a very different thing. And so so maybe one of the biggest surprises was that it was exactly the same guy. You know, the subjects we talked about might have been a little bit different, but a lot of parts of our conversation could have been exactly something that you would say on the air.
In other words, what you see is what you hear.
Yes, and I mean, maybe it goes the other way around. Maybe it's that when I hear you on the radio, it sounds exactly like what you would sound like talking to someone on your back deck.
It is true. I don't really change form very, very often. So you wrote about rap music. You were a music critic for the NYT. You now write profiles. I know you told me that you were coming out west when you interviewed me to interview a boxer. Did you ever get that profile done?
I talked to the boxer, and I found out that the day after I talked to him, this is an up and coming guy, not someone that people would have heard of, but the day after I talked to him, I discovered that the very next day he got arrested. I believe he was on parole or probation and got arrested on some sort of weapons charge. I don't know if he's been sentenced yet, but basically that story is on hold.
Who else have you profiled for The New Yorker?
The last big one that they printed before this one was the comedian Cat Williams as an African-American comedian who's one of those guys who's hugely popular, but again, the readers of The New Yorker might not have necessarily known who he was.
You did that one?
Yes.
Okay.
And he's a guy who sold out Carnegie Hall and Radio City Music Hall, but kind of in sort of an underground way. And I was a fan of him, and so.
Wow. Maybe I should do Carnegie Hall. You could introduce me.
You could drive on in the little mini car.
Oh, the clown car. No, I drive. You know, I once did a live performance driving on in my '65 Cadillac. Everyone loved that one. That 65 Caddy, it represents America at another time. You know, thick glass when the chrome was thick and the women were straight was my opening line. It went over very well with my audience.
Looked a little bit like a Shriners parade.
Okay, we won't go there. What would you like your follow-up to this profile of Michael Savage to be? Meaning, I don't mean of me, but I mean, who's next?
Who's next? That's a good question, and I'd like to think that maybe there's some people out there that would read my profile of you and think, oh, maybe I'll talk to this guy, maybe he'll be fair. I can only imagine that if someone ever came to me wanting to do an article about me, I'd be extremely skittish, no matter who they were from. And so
absolutely. But remember what I said to you toward the end of the evening after we went for Chinese food and you said you wouldn't write about that part of it and you didn't? You were true to your word. Remember what I said to you in the foggy night off Geary Boulevard? I said, Kay, I looked up at you because you're a tall guy and I'm not. And I said to you, you know, I mean, we're different in age by, what, probably 30, 40 years. I don't know how many years. And I said, you know, if we were kids in grade school, would we be friends? Remember I asked you that?
Uh-huh.
And what I said was, I said I would be your friend. And you, I don't know what you said. Did you say yes?
I said I thought that was pretty likely.
Oh, you're very, very, very cautious, aren't you?
I can imagine if that were the case, I can imagine some long, all-night discussions about all manner of things.
Where did you grow up, Kay? Where did you grow up? Here in the U.S., obviously?
I lived the first years of my life in Africa and then in Scotland, but I mainly grew up here in the Northeast, in Boston and Connecticut.
Now, am I allowed to say how distinguished your parents are? Would you mind if I mentioned it, or could you tell the people who your parents are?
I think it's all on Wikipedia anyway.
Okay. So, I mean, I was very impressed. And would you could say it better than I can, because I think it reflects upon the son that they produced in the sense of your balance. I don't know how else to put it.
Well, as most children of parents can attest, my main goal is not to bring shame upon them. But
wow, but not every child thinks that way anymore. So obviously, they instilled a sense of responsibility in you, which is very, very something we share together. Your father is a professor, and so is your mother. Isn't that correct?
My mother's actually a senior lecturer officially, but yeah, they're both at Yale University and teach fields related to Africa.
Amazing in that if someone were to look at your pedigree and someone were to say, this man would never do a fair write-up on Michael Savage, he would skewer him, and they'd probably be right 90% of the time. Why did you – no, I got to ask the question another way. When you set out to write this, did you set out with a bias in mind?
Absolutely not. I think it's a few different things. One is that I don't think I'm not sure that skewering is what I'm best at, and certainly so I wouldn't have set out that way. But to be honest, I don't think I or anyone else would have been interested if this was just going to be a profile that just says, oh, this guy Michael Savage, he's a terrible guy. I don't think the editors would have even signed off on me wanting to do that.
Well, that's what you had written me. You wrote me such an email, and I actually believed you. And one of the reasons I was relieved when I read the article Monday is because I took a gamble on humanity. And it paid off. In other words, I had my faith in the journalistic element of humanity was reaffirmed. Okay, that's the absolute truth. I said, here it comes again. After what I've just been through with the 3 months of being a tar brush, so to speak, by the British government for quota reasons, I said, that's all I need now is another body blow. I was very pleased. I mean, it wasn't like you were my PR man. There's a lot in there that people could say is negative. But I don't see it as negative. I mean, when you said I'm still weird on the webcast, I was very honored.
I think so, and I imagine that your faith in mainstream journalism has been restored, probably briefly, I would guess.
Uh-oh. Yeah, I know what's coming tomorrow. Now, here's a weird question for you. Talking about weird, the color drawing, the painting, the watercolor of me. Who in the heck did this? Because the person isn't credited here.
Let me look. I've got a copy of the magazine here.
I mean, it's not bad. They did catch my eyes. They really did. I trust the eye. But where'd they get that mouth, that, like, prissy mouth? That's not my mouth. I don't even know what picture they got it from.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know what they were using as the photo reference.
Amazing because it's somebody got a picture of me that I don't even know is on the internet.
Philip Burke is the artist, and I don't, as you can imagine, all these things are so separate. I don't know
yep.
anything about it.
Well, it's not a bad watercolor. Hey, I remember when I was a kid, there was a restaurant in New York that had all these famous New Yorker profile cartoons up on the wall. What was the name of that restaurant? Do you happen to know?
I can't remember. You're talking about the one that had the all the Al Hirschfeld drawings and stuff?
Yes. Yeah. That's the New Yorker, right?
Some of it, but the restaurant, I don't know. I'll never quite remember.
But is there such a place? Is there such a place left in New York anymore, Kay?
am I allowed in? If there is, I'm not.
Oh, well, if you're not allowed in, I'm not going in either. Or let's vice versa. If I'm not allowed in, I hope you won't either. But it's a very interesting question because I'm fascinated right now with a series on TV called Mad Men, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yeah.
All right, so I got season one, season two. Last night I watched season one. I couldn't stop watching it because it's quintessential Manhattan, 1959, 1960, with all of the incredible bars, you know, the interior shots of that kind of bar, where the men all wore suits, the women were all dressed to the nines, the hair was done, the nails were done, the guys had perfect hair. I mean, does that New York still exist?
Did it ever, really?
I don't know. It didn't exist for me, because I can't stand wearing a suit and tie.
Although, like many things on TV and in the news recently, it does make me thirsty just thinking about it.
Thirsty. I know where you're going with that one. Well, when you go back to the New Yorker, do people at all say anything to you, such as, why did you pick him? Or why didn't you do a hatchet job on him? No one would dare say that to you, would they?
It's a very polite office, so you don't get negative feedback anyways. But I've gotten probably more positive feedback from this than from the other pieces I've written. I think part of what people liked about it is that, you know, you were talking about it on the air, and it really felt like a conversation between these two institutions that wouldn't normally be expected to have a conversation.
I'm speaking with Kay Senna, who wrote the profile of Michael Savage in The New Yorker, and I really encourage you to go out and buy it. I don't make any money from it, and Mr. Senna doesn't make an additional royalty if you buy it. The reason is I want the world to know that conservatives read, because I think there's a general misconception that conservatives drag their knuckles and don't read, that they don't read anything except perhaps the Gun Digest, which I read. I like gun magazines, but not to the exclusion of anything else. If you have a question or a comment, this is your one shot in life to ask it of our guest right here on the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Here's a caller out of Los Angeles, KGIL. Tom, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, hello, Michael. Pleasure to speak with you.
Yes, sir.
I went to go pick up the article in Encino, Barnes & Noble's. Really excited after you've been talking about it for so many weeks. And having it in my hands, taking it home, opening it up, and finding out that the middle section of the magazine was completely torn out.
Now we could look at that one of two ways. A fan who was poor stole it because they read Abbie Hoffman where he said, steal this book. Or they ripped it out because they hate my politics. Which one do you think it is?
Well, initially I thought it was because they hated your politics. So when I went in there today to exchange it, which I got the good copy, I looked through all the other copies and they were full. So I happened to think maybe somebody really wanted to read the article and they couldn't afford the magazine for whatever reason.
All right. Not a bad call. Very interesting. Do not rip the article out of a magazine. Buy the darn thing. Kay, can you stay with us for a couple of minutes?
Sure, of course.
We're speaking with the author of Party of One in the New Yorker, Kay Senna, right here on the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. We'll be right back. Savage.
Yeah, Mike, sounds like you're suffering from the mental disorder known as liberalism.
Well, no, it sounds like you're a true believer who can't think creatively. You're one of these guys who thinks that Republicans or conservatives should think a certain way. So you're basically a robot. You listen and you repeat what you hear. But you don't want to actually use your heart and your mind, do you? He hung up because he had no answer. He's a true believer. Can't you use your own thinking? Why are you opposed to giving a man a little bit more money to live on? I don't understand it, Randy. Do you own a restaurant?
I'm not opposed to it at all, if that's my decision. If this is a free market we live in, Mike, could I be able to
come? Oh, don't give me that rubbish about free market. If we left it to the free market, you'd bring slave laborers in here. Free market, my eye. Nothing is free about it. That's an absolute ruse of the rich pigs on top who want you to believe that there's such a thing as a free market. That market is rigged from top to bottom.
Savage.
The form of Savage's show, the quick cuts from one topic to another, the way familiar political observations give rise to baffling digressions, the fluctuating tension between his blue state life and his red state message, turn off the music, is at least as important as its content, which means that it's hard to understand him and his appeal at second hand. The immoderate quotes meticulously cataloged by the liberal media watchdog site, blankety blank, insofar as they reduce a willfully erratic broadcast to a series of political brickbats, are accurate but misleading, says the author Kay Senna, who wrote the profile of Michael Savage in The New Yorker, which I recommend you go out and buy. Let's go to Medford. Jenny, quickly, you're in Medford, Oregon. What's your comment?
Dr. Savage, I'm a huge fan, and I packed up my two little babies and drove 20 miles to the local Barnes & Noble, and when I got there, they were completely sold out. So I just want to let you know you have a huge following in Medford.
God bless you. Thank you very much. You see that, Senna? Your magazine, your editor should be very proud of you.
And we've just learned it. We've apparently from the caller before that, we learned how people could save $4.99 and just
no, don't do the Abby Hoffman. They're liable to go out and do that. Oh God. Okay, let's go to line five. Trip in Chicago. Quick comment.
Hi, I was wondering if Mr. Senna had any comment or opinion on the state of the mainstream media, particularly print, if he thought it was generally balanced.
That's an easy question. Kay, care to comment?
I think it's almost impossible for any newspaper or magazine to be balanced, let alone the media as a whole.
That's absolutely true. In other words, how many times have I said the same thing? I admit that I'm subjective, and I admit that I'm biased. I mean, I try to support my positions with facts or any kind of persuasion I can come up with. But fundamentally, this is a medium of subjectivity. There's nothing objective or scientific about what people think.
And I think that a big part of what's changed over the last few decades is that people who feel that way, detect that bias, have so many more options now and so many other places to go to and so many other voices to listen to.
Yeah, you're right. And that's why people think that the other guy is biased, because they see many other opinions on the Internet. Fort Lauderdale, Ed, welcome to the Savage Nation. Question, a comment from Mr. Senna.
Question is for Mr. Senna. Mr. Senna, I understand your parents are professors and everything, but is there anybody in your family that actually that reminds you of Dr. Savage with any that shares any of the same views?
That's a good question. I think when I listen, you know, it's funny when I listen to him, I can imagine that, to be honest, none of my relatives really live in this country, so I don't have the experience that a lot of other people have of talking to their uncle or someone at a family picnic or something. So,
isn't your father a theologian?
Sorry, say that again?
Isn't your father a theologian?
He's a historian of religion.
Okay, and that's very interesting. So, but he studies what, African religions or Christianity? Which one?
He studies Christianity and Islam.
Okay, but when you were a child, I don't want to delve too much into your personal life, but when you were a child, would your father read to you from both the Quran and the Bible?
No, it wasn't like that, but certainly, you know, I think I would like to think that he, you know, taught me how to think critically about things and have that kind of a perspective. But it's, you know, what he does, you know, he's, you know, like a serious scholar. And I'm very self-conscious that I'm a guy who writes for a magazine, which is a job I like, but a very different sort of job.
We're out of time, and I recommend everyone listening to the show who enjoys the Savage Nation and who loved hearing the honest voice of the author, Kay Senna, who wrote Party of One for The New Yorker. Go out and buy it. You're a wonderful young guy, Kay, and I wish you a tremendous career ahead of you. Thank you very much for treating me fairly.
Thanks for everything, and thanks for talking to me.